This is the Roaring Elephant Podcast. And once again, here I am with my co-processing co-host. Hello, Jan.
I'm co-processing. Am I co-processing audio, video?
I mean, all of the above.
No, not abstract art. I'm very bad at art. But we're back with number 3 of our quantum computing demystifying episodes, let's call them that. So if you haven't listened to the past few ones, you might want to go back to them because we're kind of building up towards more and more complicated things. Mm-hmm. Though we do try to keep it, accessible. And again, anybody have any feedback, information, please feel free to send us emails or contact us any way you want. To quantum teleportation, even if you want to, because then at least I know that exists. But help us make this good for everybody. Last time we talked about this, we talked about what they were not and why they were different. So now let's talk about how they can be better, these quantum chips. And by the way, you kind of warned people in the first episode, we're going to do too much quantum. Last episode, we almost didn't mention the word quantum.
I mean, I could go back and list the number of times you said quantum, but ain't no one got time for that, so sorry.
Hey, I need a quantum computer for that.
Yeah, definitely. Or, you know, so, time.
So why are quantum computers better? Why do you think quantum computers are better?
I guess
it's new, you know, and it's expensive and sells a lot of stuff, obviously.
I mean, they've got to be a great tax write-off. That's got to be, like, the reason for quantum computing, right? Yeah? Am I close?
A lot of scientific research is being paid at the moment.
And there you go.
It is not politically biased, or it's not like climate control where there's a lot of... Can I talk? It's very specific, very scientific, very, very mathematical, so it's a very safe thing, I guess, yes.
Yeah, there we go. There's solved it.
And for the non-rich people among us?
Oh, God. Well, I suppose, I mean, it's got to be something to do with the fact that they are more efficient, or they should be more efficient at certain tasks that take our current non-quantum devices far longer to do. So either, you know, they do things that our current iteration of technology is just unable to do, full stop, or could eventually do given inordinately large amounts of time, but the amount of time it would take them to do makes our current technology to do these things impractical, yet with quantum hardware, it makes the impossible possible. How about that?
Well, that's impossible. If something was impossible, it means it by definition cannot be made possible. So trying to make the scientific hard science. Don't do things like that. Come on. And to be fair,
but I'm the very definition of soft science, so you know, just vibing here.
Soft science. Nope. So anything that is near impossible can be done with a classical computing with infinite time and infinite resources. And that's basically where it comes from. And just like a GPU is able to be faster than a CPU because it does parallel processing versus serial processing. But is it a good thing? Because if you think about it, we used to have things called SCSI connectors. Hard disk versus SCSI hard disk were parallel interfaces. And they were replaced by much faster SATA disks, which used serial. So serial is faster than parallel. Isn't that
weird? I mean, it's tastier as well. So, you know, there's that.
Okay, this was a facepalm moment.
Hey, you set it up.
I had to think about that one. Oh, man. Serial. I'm going to slisp a bit more. This is going to be very bad editing. But yes, the thing I was saying, trying to say is that, yes, so the quest for quantum computing is to do things that classical computing is too slow at and for all practical means couldn't work. But the funny thing is that every time up until now that one of the quantum producers, vendors, makers, whatever you want to call them, had their big quantum breakthrough thing happening, it takes like 2 weeks, and then somebody comes up, yeah, but with classical computing, you do it like this, and it's just as fast. So, I mean, just like parallel disks were, and at the end, replaced by sequential. Mm-hmm. Sequential, that's a better one than serial. access patterns. We're still in that very dynamic situation at the moment where they think they found something. But again, the best way for humanity to get a breakthrough is to tell them you can't do it. Because then that's when people start, so you want to go to the moon? You can't go to the moon. We went to the moon. The only reason we went to the moon is because somebody said we couldn't. We climbed Mount Everest because somebody said we couldn't. So the moment that the quantum thing comes up, hey, I made something that you with classical computing can't do. Apparently a whole flock of scientists descend upon that problem. And a couple of weeks later, they've been able to debunk it again. Well, not debunk it, because again, the quantum chip was able to do the benchmark. We talked about it last time, benchmarking, mm-hmm. they were able to do it. But again, that benefit of the quantum dropped away again. There is, of course, the thing that the quantum breakthroughs all happen in simulation, because again, we still don't have enough quantum hardware to actually do these algorithms in live, in real time. But there's some assumptions being made and things like that, but still, it's still leapfrogging each other at the moment. Mm. But in theory, yes, the quantum chips should be faster than the non-quantum counterparts because of that parallelism. But there's a different kind of parallelism happening. Because the parallelism that a CPU can do versus the CPU, GPU can do versus the CPU, I think I said that wrong the first time, is in polynomial space. And a polynomial, we all know that, of course, that's when you have a mathematical equation that has exponents, x plus x squared plus x to the third plus x to the fourth, things like that. The variable is below. The variable is not in the exponents themselves. They're simple 2, 3, 4 numbers in the exponent position. And that's basically where your matrix acceleration can happen with a GPU, because it can be exponentially faster, which is great, because exponentially is very, very fast. Mm-hmm. And I said it wrong, because we're talking about polynomial, not exponential. I have to redo this whole thing again. Forget I said exponential there, it's all polynomial. But we're working towards the exponential. Because exponential means that the variable is actually in the exponent. So instead of having x plus x squared plus x to the third, we say 23 to the power x. That's exponential. And there's a very old example of exponential math and how fast that actually grows. And that's the old Chinese chessboard. So the myth goes that in China, chess was invented, and the emperor was so pleased that chess was a beautiful game. He loved the game, so he told the inventor, anything you want, I will give you. And all he said was, okay, just put a grain of rice on the first square of the chessboard, and then just double it for every next square. And that's an example of a of an exponential equation, because by the time you're on the 64th square, I had to write this down because I couldn't remember it, there are actually 18 quintillion grains of rice on that square.
That's a very, very full square.
That's a very big chessboard, yeah. That's actually more rice than the world has. But that's just to illustrate how big the complexity goes when you go from polynomial to exponential. And that's kind of the step, that the leap we're trying to take, going from CPU to GPU to quantum. And the reason that this works, the reason that this exponential growth is possible, comes from that whole idea of superposition, where we talked earlier, where a qubit could contain the number 1, the number 0, but also every state in between at the same time. And the whole idea is to have calculations happening, not one by one. Think about protein folding. How does protein folding work? Well, let's take a protein and fold it like this. And now put it through a benchmark. No, it didn't work. Fold it like this. Put it to a benchmark. Doesn't work. Fold it like this. Benchmark. Doesn't work. This is an iterative approach, sequential approach, if you like. And even if you do it polynomially faster, it'll still take a very long time to have every, if you know that a protein has like, I don't know, 10, 20, 30 components that can all fold in different directions, that's going to take a very long time. Now think about this in quantum, where you can do all folds at the same time and just read the successful one.
Mm.
That's kind of the dream of the whole thing. You let the thing do its thing, and you will get the answer in one go instead of going through every iteration time by time by time. And that is actually the reason I'm talking about protein folding, is because that's one of the existing practical applications today with quantum computing. There is actually quantum hardware, the D-Wave computers, that are being used for this today. And they are actually quite successful. It's still somewhat experimental. It's still not factory ready. But this is actually something that works, and they are able to increase things. The problems are still there with all of the error corrections, because it's not because the thing says this is the answer that is true, because it's so much chance that it's wrong because something went wrong along the way. That's still something we have to work upon for a lot of things. But it's this kind of leap to the exponential environment that allows these quantum chips to be so much faster. But you can imagine that it's incredibly hard to code for something like that. Because how can you put something in a state that can then be given to the quantum magic to do everything? And how do you then read the one thing you want to know? Because the one thing with superposition is that when you read it, it collapses to a single value. Not the single value you want, the single value it decides to give you. And that's basically where all of the quantum gates and programming, that's kind of what I want to do, because you kind of want to be able to read what's happening inside the whole quantum thing without reading it, because the moment you read it, it collapses and you lose that huge parallel thing.
So this is where the act of observing something actually changes the result.
Yes, that's what how most people would say it. Yes, that's where observing makes the wave function collapse to a single state, and then you have read that state and you lost all the others. And the trick is to read the one you want. Now, this comes from the whole Schrodinger thing, and we're going to be talking about Schrodinger's uncertainties principle in the next episode, because that's a whole complicated thing, so I don't want to go into that right now. But yes, that's the whole idea. You can either have all of the states unsupervised, or you can supervise it. And people have tried to be smart about this, because earlier we talked about these two entangled qubits. Now, you have two entangled qubits of two entangled qubit systems. Well, we'll let this one do its thing. Since it's all being copied to this one anyway, I'm going to read this one. No, the moment you read this one, that one also collapses. And this has actually been proven. There's actually proven experiments. And that's when I said last time, faster than light, because it's proven that there is not enough time for something in the ether. Ether actually existed as a scientific concept a long, long time ago. We know today it's something else. But that something had some connection through, I don't know, dark energy, black matter, whatever. No, it just happens instantaneously, and it shouldn't be possible. And any kind of trick you want to do, it doesn't work. So, yeah, there's a lot of hand-wavy magic in quantum still today. I mean, that's why this quantum is such an interesting subject matter at the moment, because it's not really thought out yet. Classical mechanics, we pretty much know how it works. But the quantum world is still very, very weird, I think is the word. Now, there is one thing I did find more, which is called... any fans of the... I forget the name. Was it Sherlock? The series, not the BBC series, but the American series about Sherlock Holmes from 10 years ago or something like that. And they actually had an episode called P versus NP, which I thought was very courageous, because I'm pretty sure almost nobody knew what this was about. But if you ever hear about P versus NP, that's actually polynomial versus non-polynomial, or polynomial versus exponential. And that's basically when the quantum supremacy has been proven, is when you have a system, a problem that cannot be solved in the P realm, but only in the NP realm. So it cannot be solved in polynomial time, which means it can be solved if you have infinite polynomial time, but we don't have infinite polynomial time, so it can't be finished that way, but can be finished in the exponential acceleration. Then you have quantum, it's not supremacy, we have a word for that, we talked about it last time, I forget what it is right now, but you have that quantum breakthrough, which you actually have proven that it is better, practically usable, whatever, than it is. And as I mentioned earlier in the episode, every time up till now when somebody claimed they had something that was not possible in P, but were able to do it in P with quantum, 2 weeks later somebody said, yeah, but I can do it in P as well. So, eh.
So you mentioned a term there, which I don't think we've mentioned yet, at least not in this particular series, quantum supremacy. Now, my brain immediately goes to like video games and things like that, but I'm guessing it's not that. What's the simplest definition you can come up with for quantum supremacy?
It's quite simple. That's when you can do something with a quantum chip you cannot do with anything else.
Right. Okay. So it is that. It's that proof that. It's the proof of the thing that you were just talking about, yes. Of where people are unable to disprove the fact that, oh, yes. Actually, we can do this with our traditional existing.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
It's like the singularity moment for quantum computing. That's when people can actually say, I invested all that money and it was worth it. Until that moment happens, it's just money you throw away because it's fun.
Cool. Fair enough.
And again, we'll probably have a couple of false positives before we have a real positive, because as I said, people, the moment you tell them, hey, I found something you can't do, mm-hmm. give me a couple of weeks. And that's how things work. That's good. That's how these things work. Now, there's another term called BQP, which stands for bounded error quantum polynomial time, which is specific NP for quantum. It's complicated, but the way that I see it is that NP is not... I mean, you have to see P as part of NP, and BQP is even bigger than that. So we go further than that as well. Just mention the term here, because if you do some research on this, you will encounter this BQP thing. But basically, at the moment, people aren't trying to prove things that they can do in NP and not in P. They're trying to prove they can do things in that bounded error quantum polynomial time, which you can't do in polynomial time. So. Same idea, it's just a bit of a refinement of those terms, but basically P versus NP is what most people will still look at when they talk about this. So that's about why this should be better and how this works. Anybody who's interested in this stuff, you should go on YouTube and search for the Feynman lectures. They're old, they're in black and white, very bad audio quality. But if you're really interested and you're at the beginning, it's a very nice way of getting introduced to the magic of the whole quantum environments. But it all has to do with that light wave dual wave particle duality of light, which you talked about earlier. That's mm-hmm. where you got to know that these things work. And you have all the superconductor coming in and all that fun stuff. But I think we already covered most of that before. I mean, one piece of information I still have written down here is, why is it all so hard? Because quantum stuff is happening all the time. I mean, everything, we, you, me, everybody, we're all built on quantum computing, quantum mechanical, that's a good word, theories. Your atoms, your molecules consist of atoms. Your atoms consist of neutrons, protons, and electrons. And those are actually all behaving in quantum mechanical states. Mm-hmm. What we're trying to do with quantum computing is make those microscopic quantum level things work on a macro level so that we can actually work with them. Because at the quantum level, when you're below the de Broglie wavelength, for example, it gets very, very, very small, and that's very hard to do. But if you can get that to work, then Moore's law, for example, will live on forever, because Moore's law at the moment is breaking because we're using light lithography to make the chips, and light has a bandwidth, and you can't make something smaller than the bandwidth mm-hmm. of your light. So that's why we went from infrared to ultraviolet, shorter wavelengths. That is going to stop at some point, so we'll mm-hmm. have to stop with lights at some point, and at that, well, maybe we'll go into the whole quantum realm to build these things, and that's also a piece of the future. Anyway, next time we're going to be talking about the actual principles of quantum computing. So things like the uncertainty principle, superposition, and entanglement. And up until now, this was kind of the gentle introduction. Next episode, we're going to take a dive, not in the rabbit hole yet, but we will be circling the rabbit hole. Is that a good analogy? I don't know.
The wormhole of quantum computing.
Oh, no, no, no. Don't talk about wormholes. That's totally different things. Because wormholes are supposed to be black holes that point up into a white hole, and they are Einstein proof that they exist. And we have actually experimentally found black holes, but you can't have black holes if there aren't any white holes. And we haven't found a white hole yet.
I mean, they're at the other end. Just need to go down there.
Which would be an Einstein-Rosen bridge, which we haven't proven scientifically actually works.
I mean, so. you just need to go down there. It's right at the other end. It's easy. No problem.
It's like podcasting, right? We're on one end, it goes into the ether, into the wormhole, and it ends up with
Yes, exactly. Ends up in everyone's magical ears, magical devices into their ears.
Yes, these things. I mean, they're not connected to anything, and I have sound.
I know. See, it's all very quantum.
Actually, that's actually a fun thing, because I can imagine that 100 years ago, when people first saw the radio, they had the same thing. How can this work? This is magic.
I mean, this is it. I mean, the whole kind of development throughout history has always been things that we ascribe to be, this is like some cross between witchcraft, magic, and insanity, and yet then smarter people figure out how it works, how to explain it, and then it becomes, this is just commonplace, this is how it works now. And it's been that way all the way from fire through to now, quantum computing is just the one of the next horizons of this sort of thought.
Yeah, but they don't explain everything. Because I can remember when I was young, we had this radio with an aerial antenna, and you had to kind of touch it with this specific finger and put your foot in that square and then twiddle your hair this way to get good reception. And that was just, I always thought that's how magic and alchemy and all of these things came from, people doing strange movements with their hands and body and whatever. Hey, it worked for reception of radio, so there must be something in there.
Yeah, it's probably quantum.
No. Oh, yeah. Unless you have any other questions, I'm not sure if I'm doing the outro this time.
You are indeed.
In that case, Dave has given me the wink and nudge and quantum push to say that we don't have any more time to talk about quantum. I have to say it one more time. More this day. You can support this podcast. You can be a patron. Patron do help us do research like this to make qualitative, good quality control and things like that. You can like us on YouTube. We have videos going up there all the time as well. That way you can see me do air quotes instead of hearing about them, which is always a better thing. And you can go to our website at www.roaringoff.org. There's links there to the pages, information about podcasts, and a way to give us feedback by email using podcast@roaringelephant.org. Let us know if you like this or not. Until next time, my name is... I wish Schrodinger's equation was easier, Jon.
And my name is Entangled Dave.
I look forward to untangling Dave next week. Goodbye.
Yeah, you're going to be here a long time. See you then.